Thank you very much, Nathan. Following Dan is working out well because it's going to put what I have to say in perspective, and what we did, it's going to show pretty much that it wouldn't necessarily apply globally, what we came up with, but the question is then, where would it apply? Dan looked at field scale tests. He looked at what was the economics of it. That's pretty much what we've done, but in a different environment. And the implications for us, it's pretty simple work, but it's almost a whole different way of looking at it that might be a little bit hard to wrap your head around. So when we get to the end, I'm going to really try on the last slide to show you where I think we can go with this. To start off with, to get you oriented, I'm going to do a couple of quick question and answer. First question, what's the main tool we use to make P&K decisions? And you've seen the last couple of talks talking about soil test. Well, that's where we are. That's how we make those decisions. Either that or we don't use anything. And so hopefully we use soil test most of the time to give us some information. What does the soil test tell you? I've been well set up on this one, too. It tells you the probability of getting a yield response. And Dan had some of those numbers of, actual probabilities at different soil test levels of getting a yield response. Now, one thing that comes in there is that soil test, how did that soil test get set up? Is it a long-term experiment where you've had zero for 20 years, or is it not? Because that's going to affect not only what's in that top 6-inch soil test, but what's in down below it. So what you're showing in your soil test, it's not just what's in that top 6 inches, it's the history of your whole information system. But we're looking at basically, in some way, evaluating the probability of response to P&K. And here's where kind of a new idea comes in. Why don't we just measure that yield response to P&K? Rather than predict it from a soil test, why don't we just measure it on a farm or in a field, see what it is, and use that to help guide our decisions? And the answer to me is, this has been doable all along, but it was too much trouble. Now we've got the tools to just, somebody clicks a few buttons, and there's a zero strip through the field, and then they click a few more buttons, and it's not that easy. I actually can't do it myself, but they analyze the yield map to see what the outcome was. I have a person who's excellent at doing that, so I just know the idea that I want done, and so that's what we've done. So the concept here, we've got these zero PK strips. This particular field, the consultant that was working with the producer programmed in 2 zero strips through the field. They're shown in white. They actually go to the ends of the field, but the area that we used is bounded on the ends by the white lines. The rest of the field got variable rate P&K broadcast based on a grid soil sampling procedure. And then we take the yield map and we say, okay, what happened? What was our yield where we put P&K compared to where we didn't? And in this example, there's one square that got P&K. There's an adjacent square that didn't get P&K. We just subtract the yield with P&K. We subtract the yield without P&K from the yield with P&K and get the yield response, and then we map it. And I'm showing you that right here. Our outcome, two main things. Low yield response, but the yield response was spatially clustered. So the dark blue actually include quite a number of negative points. It's pretty much zero plus or minus 20 bushels. And I, if anyone is not comfortable with the bushels units and so on, I apologize, but I felt that for this audience, I might have more people who are fluent in bushels than in megagrams. So that's why I've couched it this way. So pretty much plus or minus 20 bushels, except for this one clustered area where there was a much higher response. Let's talk about the low yield response first. Average 3.4 bushels per acre response to P&K. This is a corn field with $6 per bushel corn, which I wouldn't have been using last year or the year before or the year before, but let's just say for the sake of discussion now that $6 is a reasonable thing to talk about into the future. That's $20 per acre benefit. Now, this person spent $63 per acre on the P&K and $8 on the variable rate application and came out $50 per acre behind field average. But there's that place where there was a high yield response. Now, is that the low testing part of the field? That's what you'd expect, that the low testing area is the place where you got that response. And in this field, well, the soil test P had no relationship. You'll see that the high yield response areas were, if anything, a bit above the rest of the field in their soil test P, but really no pattern. Same thing for soil test K, and instead of being a little bit clustered, the soil test K was very spread out in the highly responsive areas. So what was going on? If it wasn't soil test, what was controlling that response? And I think that it was strongly correlated to the soil map unit. This is an alluvial soil. I've used yellow to kind of help accentuate the outline of this mold and loamy fine sand. And it's not only that it's a sand transitioning to something else, it's transitioning to a silt loam, which is then transitioning to a silty clay loam. It's a very strong textural gradient in this field, and it's the loamy fine sand where we're getting the response. And probably not a tremendously big surprise. We all know that the CEC and the ability of the sand to hold nutrients isn't going to be as much as the other soils. Okay, that was one field. I'll quickly hit a couple more. That was the one down here in southeast Missouri. I'll go on to the one in northeast and then the one in southwest. While I remember, I'll mention that the two in 2010 were both broadcast. The one in 2009 was strip till with injected P and K. And so those are the application methods. So here is the northeast Missouri field in 2010. And again, the color-coded rectangles show you how much response we got to the combined P and K application. And let's kind of go through the overview. A larger yield response, 7.5 bushels per acre, which is pretty good. The average soil test was only 6 part per million, so very low testing. This was a father-son operation with management kind of transitioning from the father to the son, starting pretty much the year we did this. The father had not been a big believer in P and K. He'd put on a little bit of Nature's now and then. 10 years of, you know, or more of pretty much just mostly mining the soil and letting it drop, and they still only got a 7.5 bushel response, which was not really what I expected on this farm. But they were working with a consultant, and the son and the consultant got together, they grid sampled the farm. They did not variable apply. They just put on a flat 25, 120, 100. They spent $134 per acre and made $45 back at $6 corn. So that put them nearly $90 in the hole per acre, even though they'd been not really very vigilant in their P&K program. And, you know, I didn't really help the son out in his transition. he was hoping to show his dad that he was going to make more money for the farm by doing this. Again, the soil map unit appeared to be related to yield response. You can see the down in the southwest part of that field, there's an Armstrong loam, and there's a pretty substantial yield response. I think we've done the statistics on that and shown that that map unit had a statistically significant yield response, whereas the other ones did not. That is the probably the lowest landscape position in this field, the most eroded. So here's the third one. This is the one where it was band applied, subsurface injected, and there's, again, color coding of the yield response. The blue means essentially no response. They spent $90 per acre on P&K. They were doing a variable rate application, and you can see the rates that went out on average. Their average yield response was 6 bushels, minus $50 per acre on average. And again, the soil map unit appears to be related to yield response. There's a Barco silt loam up in the northwest part of the field that pretty clearly was responsive, and I know we did the statistics on this and that the Barco was statistically significant response, and map unit was a statistically significant predictor of response in this field. And you'll also notice in the northeast corner of the field, there's an inclusion of Barco that is close to another area that appears to be possibly responsive. What's going on here? I don't really know. I don't know if there's a causal relationship, but what I can tell you is every other soil in that field is derived in place from shale, but those Barcos are derived in place from sandstone. So it's a different parent material. Is that what's controlling the difference in response? You really have to do it multiple times and have it happen multiple times. That's how science works before you say that's what's going on. But it's plausible that difference in parent material is what's controlling that. So we can find out not only what's the economics on a particular field, we can maybe identify where the more responsive areas are and what factors control those if we do this enough. So in all three fields, we lost money on P and K. The soil test values had no predictive ability at all in two of the fields. In the third field, which was that low testing field, if you did a a linear contrast between the very lowest testing and the higher testing. There was a difference that there was more of a yield response in the very lowest testing soils. Not a great relationship, but something was there for soil test. In all three fields, we made money on P and K in certain map units and not in the rest of the field. Why is there this low yield response? Well, I think one reason for us, and that may be why things are different for Daniel, is the subsoil P and K. And we've made from actually deep samples we took for nitrogen studies, we measured P and K on them to look at what subsoil P and K is like. The phosphorus, let me try to run you through this. Our target value is expressed in a mass, pounds per acre, in our soil test rather than parts per million like most states. And so it makes it really easy to transfer it to this mass and depth. We recommend 45 pounds per acre in the topsoil as our target value. So I've taken these, we've kriged them and put them into a scale of multiples of that target value. So down in the southeast corner, we're above four times our target value of our topsoil is what was on average in the subsoil. Now, that's based mostly on a few samples down here in our highly agricultural delta area. The medium brown is 3 to 4 times higher than our target value located in the subsoil of phosphorus. So there's a gradient going from east to west with less phosphorus in the subsoil in the west, getting to where in this beige-colored area, it's less in that 6 to 36-inch depth in the subsoil than we recommend having in the topsoil. Potassium, much simpler. Pretty much the bulk of the state is 3 to 4 times as much potassium in the subsoil as we recommend having in the top 6 inches. So subsoil P and K may be why we're not getting a lot of these responses. That may control it in other locations as well. Here is where the meat of my message, where I'm thinking we can go with our producers in this, is if they want to take this on, they can use this as an on-farm management tool. And the first thing is try strips with zero P and K like we've done. Now, if you do that and you find out where your responses are and so on, so what? What are you going to do with that? How is that going to benefit you? Well, here's the radical idea, and controversial potentially. If you don't get much yield response, if you're not making money on your P and K, switch it over so that instead of having zero strips, you have a few strips through the field with P and K. These are actually zero strips that I've got outlined here, but conceptually, once you'd tested that out and found out you weren't going to lose a lot of money by doing it, you could switch to where you only had, those would be the strips with P and K. Now, you wouldn't want them to be the strips without and then switch them to be the strips with, but you'd want to go, okay, some other area in this field that had P and K, let's take the strips just south of these. We're going to keep applying P and K on those every year, and the rest of the field we're not going to fertilize, and we're going to get the yield maps. We're going to apply those same strips every year with a good rate of P and K so we know that it's fully sufficient, and then we're going to carefully monitor it with yield data. Now, you got to have somebody probably who can work as a consultant with a producer to help them get through that. And then when an economical yield response is seen, go back to replacement applications. If it was me, I'd be looking at a double application the first year that I was profitable on my P and K so that I'm not at the edge of the cliff anymore. I've tiptoed toward the edge of the cliff. I've used my yield map as my canary in my coal mine to keep me from going over the edge of the cliff. Now I'm going to back away from the edge because I don't want to be at the edge. But why do I want to be close to the edge? I want to be close to the edge because we've got a lot of capital tied up in our soil that if we choose to, we can withdraw, and the penalty potentially has always been we'd lose a lot of yield. Now we've got the tools to make sure that we don't have that happen. Potentially you wouldn't do the whole field the same. You'd start with the full replacement applications on certain yield, certain soil map units first where you're getting the most response. The savings here are temporary. You're withdrawing from the soil bank. You're converting that into cash. At some point you got to go back to full replacement applications. You can't keep doing this forever. I've got guys who say, I want to place my P and K and put on a half rate. I blame Minnesota for that. But, you know, you can do that for a while, but you're going to hit a wall, and they haven't figured that out. That's the problem, is at some point you got to go back to replacement. So the question is, how many years can you go? If you can go 1 year and then you're done, it's probably not worth doing it. But, for example, that family that had really not put any P and K to speak of for 10 years, they must have been getting it from somewhere. They must have been getting it from their subsoil. Was that good or was that bad? Well, in many cases, we said mining is bad, but I think we're to the point with P and K prices where we can at least talk about it. Is this a reasonable idea for your farm? And if someone could go, say, for example, 7 years on average over their 1,000 acres that they farm, and before they hit that cliff and have to start putting on those rates according to the yield map that says they're going to need it, and they've been putting on $80 per acre per year of P&K, they've got $560,000 to put somewhere else in that operation that's going to make them money. And the P&K wasn't giving them a yield response. It was capital. It was something they owned. It was something that was of value, but it was not something that was making them more money than using it up was. And looking at Lloyd Murdoch's data from Kentucky, they may actually have a leak in that bank account on their phosphorus. He saw over 10 years of CRP that the soil test P-values went down substantially. So that's pretty much the whole message, and looks like I've used up all my time.
Yes.
I apologize for that.